Well, it's a match made in heaven. Now, their love story has been seen around the world.
I, Beecher, take you, April.
I, April, take you, Beecher.
I vow to love and honor you.
Promise to remain by your side.
I do.
I do.
This is the story of how a seemingly perfect Christian couple went against evangelical culture to embrace their authentic selves and found a healthier marriage in the process.
This is the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. My name's Beecher.
And I'm April. And we are excited to get into this next episode. But before we do, again, we have been just so overwhelmed with all the positive feedback that we're getting. So thank you all. This is really heavy for us to talk about. After we finished recording the last episode, Beecher had to just take a moment and...
Yeah.
Because it's a lot for us. Like, we've been living in peace and freedom now for, I don't know, a couple years.
And we've referenced with each other moments like the ones we've been talking about, but never in one 40-minute sit-down. It's heavy. And I would say, you know, the previous episode and this episode are probably the heaviest of this series. And if you remember... We left off. We went to Baltimore for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a very low point where I just stopped caring and stopped driving my life. But I did finally get in to see a therapist who would kind of give me life-saving help. And so that was kind of the first half of our dating relationship, which, for the record, was only 4 months.
Yeah, that whole last episode, that happened over a period of 4 months.
So. And the next season that we're going to talk about was of a similar time frame, but it kind of gets through the last half of our dating. Once again, this is going to talk about some pretty heavy things.
And I think, you know, I could see some people being like, why do you feel like you need to go into all the details? Well, first of all, we are cutting out a lot of detail, but... I think for us, it's one for transparency, but two, in evangelical circles, which it's tragic that this is the case, but they look at like LGBTQ people and think like they just wake up one day and choose it. And it's the devil that gets into your head. And it's like they only respect you if they see a struggle, which is stupid and shouldn't be the case. But I don't know, just to show like this... We did not just choose this. Like, if anything, we've tried to fight it away.
Right. But, I mean, where we are at in our lives and the amount of trans people that I have met and I've connected with, everyone's story is different.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that did not go through the same 2-decade struggle realizing they were trans. And that's beautiful. Like, I love hearing stories from people that didn't have to go through everything we went through. And we fully support... a freedom and liberation that LGBTQ people can find without the pain
that
we had to go through. And
absolutely.
So while our story, I think it's really great that we get our story out there because it just gives another perspective and it gives insight. But once again, we celebrate everybody no matter if they went through any difficulty.
Right. But I think I just want like the reason why it was such a struggle and why it was so dark and heavy was because of the indoctrination that we had been taught that anything outside of, you know, gender norms is satanic.
Right. Anything the church doesn't understand is satanic.
Right.
But that's a totally...
That's a different topic.
Separate
Maybe
topic.
We'll get there. Okay. So back to our story. So we go to Baltimore. Beecher comes back, finally starts counseling, which was great for Beecher. This is the part where I don't look good. Had such a problem with Beecher going to counseling. I was like, you just need Jesus. And...
I'm doing these awful things. I am this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, crazy person. And April is like, you don't need counseling. And I'm like, this is where I feel God's leading me. Like, he led me upstairs to Mike and I woke him up in the middle of the night and his best friend's a therapist and this is where I have to go.
No, I had such an issue with it. And I couldn't even tell you why. Growing up Pentecostal, you know, it's very... you just need Jesus. You don't need man. You just need Jesus. And so I think at one point Beecher had been trying to get me to go to counseling. And I think at one point I sent you, it was like, why I'm not the one who screwed up.
Yeah, he definitely said that. Right? I was in my garage. That's where I was living at the time, renting a garage. And yeah, I remember you saying that to me. And I remember it was actually soon after that that I was in the shower and I was just like, God, I feel like you're leading me to this therapist. Like, all signs are pointing me to this direction. I have to go to her. It's really difficult that April's not on board. I'm so tired of arguing and trying to convince her that this is the right way to go. Can you just handle it? And I just prayed that, and then I moved on. And the next day, it was the next day, we were cuddling on the couch, and April got real quiet and just goes, huh, I wonder if I need to go to counseling. And I was like, I'm trying not to make a big deal of it, but I'm thinking to myself, like, what just happened? Like, 2 days ago, you were really against it, and then, you know, I think you were realizing not on the gender and sexuality front at this point.
Well, but I was just realizing grief. I had a lot of issues, like, with grief and then with my, you know, sexual trauma from the past. And, yeah, I'll say, though, so I ended up going to see the same counselor. We both saw the same counselor separately. And it was the best thing that I could have done because it helped me and you.
It saved our relationship and possibly saved my life. And so I will say, this counselor was great. She kind of met me where I was at. So I was using very spiritual language. She was a Christian. She kind of went along with my thinking, tried to encourage me, tried to give me small nudges and just tell me it's okay. And I think...
I also think at where you were, like, she only would say things to you that you could handle at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And she phrased things in spiritual ways that my ears could understand because I was very clear up front. Like, counseling scares me. I feel like I want it Jesus-centered. And I used all those things when I met with her. Mm-hmm. But I would say the biggest thing that she did is that she got me to start journaling. And I was journaling, like, she's like, journal every day. And I was like, okay. And I'm already a writer. I already write screenplays. I'm literally doing a challenge right now where I'm writing an hour a day on this feature screenplay I'm working on. So, like, I've been writing. I enjoy writing. I started showing up every week as I saw her with dozens of pages of journaling. Like, she said journal once a day, and I have friends that have gone to counseling, been told to journal, and they don't journal as much. Within 6 months, she actually, this is kind of funny, she had to move offices 6 months after I started seeing her, and she has to move all my files very secretly, but she had a huge stack of them, and one of her colleagues said, oh my gosh, is that all from one person? And she's like, yeah. And they said, well, how long have they been seeing you? For years. And she's like, no, this is one of my writers. He's been seeing me about 6 months. And I mean, I still have the journal. So I keep them kind of away, but I still have them. And they're dark. I mean, yeah. I will say what journaling allowed me to do is to write out all these awful things I was thinking. And then I was able to see them on the page and go, whoa, this isn't right. How could I be saying this? And the things were, for the most part, were very focused on April. They were very focused on the person that April had dated, where they had had sex. And I was so fixated on him. And I said awful things about him and awful things about April. But then I would see it and then I would respond and try to talk my way why that logic wasn't right, why that logic wasn't true. And my therapist would sit and talk with me. And that's the main thing that she did. She'd give me some homework here and there, things to work through. Yeah. She hit on different moments. But the biggest thing was journaling, and it got my head, started to get my head above water. So I wasn't on the edge of absolute breakdown.
Yeah. So Peter starts seeing a counselor. I don't think I started seeing a counselor until the fall.
Yeah, I think it was a while, but you changed your tune
right.
on it.
I was just open to it.
You were open to
it. So that would have been around May. So we started dating in December. This is May now. Mm-hmm. And Beecher and I, during this time, Beecher came out to Texas. I flew out to Georgia to meet each other's families. And that was pretty uneventful and fun. And then Beecher works summer camps all summer traveling in Georgia. So we spent the summer apart and we... lovingly call this the summer of hell.
And as we alluded to last episode, when we were apart, it was much more difficult on me. When I was around April, I could remember why I was fighting this and pursuing her and going through this emotional difficulty. When I was away from her, it was much, much more difficult.
Yeah, I know at one point Beecher called for another 7 days where we didn't talk.
And for the record, my therapist encouraged this. It wasn't just me calling for it. My therapist said, I think you need to take 7 days away from April, pray, seek some things out. So we did. And it was really difficult and really hard.
I hated it. I thought for sure. I think I didn't trust where your head was to like not be talking to me during that time. And I wasn't sure that, I don't know, I still just had some insecurities and stuff to deal with, but I was not a fan of the 7 days.
And I will say, you know, that summer, it was the weirdest experience for me because internally I was still really struggling and journaling and praying a lot, like hours a day. But my job that summer was to work production for a Christian summer camp. And so I was literally going to services in the morning and the evenings, 5 days a week. And there was worship music and speakers. And it was this, like, I was surrounded by this Christian environment, but I didn't feel like I could let anybody into this turmoil. And I would literally, I don't even know. I mean, I think I've told you this, but I would go back sometimes to my room. I'd have 2 hours in the middle of the day between services and between shooting video because I work production. And I didn't have any women's clothes. I didn't have anything that I could put on, but like I would like look at myself in the mirror and like kind of like scrunch up my t-shirt I was wearing and like started to play with feminine things and felt so much shame, like mm-hmm. so much shame. And so I'd go to worship that night and like pray and like sing so loudly and like tears just pouring down my face. And then I'd go back to my room and I'd be alone again and I'd be back in this shame and back in this turmoil.
Well, and I remember being on the receiving end. So, I mean, we get through the 7 days and we're fine, decided that God did want us to still be together and that we still loved each other. But on the receiving end, I would get these kind of cryptic texts throughout the day. Like one text would just be a random Bible verse. And then the next text would be like, you're an effing whore. Why are you doing this to me? And it was a constant back and forth of.
And I never used that language. I'd never said.
Yeah, you didn't say
I'd
F.
never said the F word before. I'd never said whore before. But like, I had so much rage and anger.
You were just not mentally well.
I was not mentally well. Yeah. And I would apologize right after I'd send a text, like very quickly. Like, I don't know where that came from. I don't know where I'm so sorry. And oftentimes it was unprovoked, the mean text, because it's just me dealing with so much turmoil and shame.
And I know a lot of people would be like, April, why on earth would you stay with that and take that? And I don't really know how to explain it other than I just was able to separate, like, when Beecher, the person that I was in love with, was talking to me. And at the time, we thought it was, we would call it a demon. But when, like, the demons would be talking, or just, mm-hmm. like, the side of Beecher that wasn't well, that needed healing, that needed to be whole, which now we know was just mm-hmm. Beecher needing to accept who they were and stop mm-hmm. trying to fight it away. But at the time, we still weren't even calling this gender dysphoria.
Yeah,
we thought it was a demon.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, in my family line, a lot of my relatives struggle with OCD. And so my therapist was kind of like saying, I think you have OCD, because the thoughts I was writing were so repetitive. I couldn't get cycles out of my head. So that was something we thought we were dealing with, but it was like OCD fixated on April and her past. And it was still only lightly touching on my identity. But I mean, it got to the point that summer, the camp I was working at was down in Jekyll Island, Georgia. And at night I would go walk on the beach and there were these giant like deadwood branches. And it's still a very spiritual place for me because I would go out there and I'd walk a mile. I mean, and that side of the island was empty and I would scream at God. Like scream at the top of my lungs at God. And I would stand there. And I remember a couple points in particular that I was standing there looking out at the ocean. And I thought, I'm just going to get in this ocean and swim as far as I can until my body can't swim anymore. Then it'll fully be in God's hands, whether or not he wants to save me. Like if I wake up on the shore, then I'll know that I'm supposed to be alive. And if I don't, then I know that he doesn't want me here. And like, there were several points that I really considered that and told April. And
one time Beecher, actually, you sent me a picture of what you were seeing on the beach and text me that you were just going to, that you were going to just walk out and just keep walking. And I got so scared. And that was what I saw.
Yeah.
I saw like you were in a dangerous place. And I knew that when you said mean things to me, that it wasn't about me. It was about your own inner struggle. And I remember, like, when you would text me these things, I would just reply, like, okay, I love you. Like, you're going to get through this. Like, yeah, we're going to get through this. And we do. We do get through it. Yeah. But
it's just such a, it's just, you know, you're going and thinking about swimming out into the ocean at night, and then you're working worship services all the next day. Mm-hmm. And as a leader, as somebody that everyone's looking up to, and it's a really lonely place to be.
Just think about that for a second. You were surrounded by Christians, yeah, all summer, and it was the loneliest place. It was. Because you couldn't be real.
Yeah, no, there was no place for me to discuss any of this with anyone.
No. So that goes on and off all summer, and then at one point Beecher flies out to Nebraska to shoot a friend's wedding.
Right. And then I'm out at Nebraska, and I'm with my friend, and she's still a really close friend, but at that point was one of my best friends, and I'm shooting her brother's wedding, and I'm hanging out with her all weekend. And while there's no romantic or sexual feelings there, I was like, man, this relationship with her is just so easy. This friendship is so easy. You know, I want to get back to this because I finally started to feel a little bit like myself, because friendships were easy for me to do. I knew how to do friendships. I was having a very hard time doing the whole relationship falling in love thing. And so it was a Sunday morning. I'd shot the wedding on Saturday. I was going to fly back Sunday night. And I was literally just pacing around my room because I was like, I'm going to break up with April because, you know, this is making me go insane. And so I was literally pacing around the room, and I started reading this Bible verse in 2 Corinthians 12. And it's Paul talking about the thorn in his side. And he said, I've prayed 3 times for God to take this thorn away from me, but he hasn't. And then in my weakness, you are strong. And I was literally walking around the room trying to memorize this verse. I'm really bad at memorization. I'm relatively smart, but bad at memorization. And I was literally walking around the room, and I was saying it out loud, trying to memorize it. And I was probably doing this for 30 minutes. And I had not talked to April at all that morning. And mm-hmm. I went to the window as I'm trying to memorize this verse. And I said, God, if you want me to stay with April, I don't want shells, which I, you know, could be debatable whether that's from you or not. At the time, I thought, I need a clear sign. Like, you come down, audibly tell me to stay with April, because that is the only way I can stay with her because of just what this is doing to me emotionally and physically and mentally. And literally within several seconds of me vocally saying that prayer, my cell phone vibrates, and it was a text from April. And at this point, I hadn't talked to April all morning. She knew I was in a bad headspace, but we hadn't talked. I didn't know where she was. She didn't know what I was doing. I go over to my phone, and it just has, the text is only the verse that I had been saying out loud.
It wasn't even written out. It was just the reference.
Yeah. Just the reference. There was no good morning, I'm at church, and the pastor just mentioned this, which is what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was just the verse. And so I fell to the floor of the hotel room. And just bawled. And I bawled on a number of fronts. On one front, it was that God had answered my prayer, that I wasn't alone, that there was a reason for this, and that I got an answer. On another front, though, I was still going to a really unhealthy place, and I realized I had to continue that journey, and that I felt God was calling me to it. And at that point, and even now, if I feel God's calling me to something, I'm going to do everything I can to do that and stay on that path. But that is one of those moments that as we talk about our faith today, as we deconstruct certain things, it is one of those moments that I cannot brush off. Yeah. Because I do not think we would be married. I do not think we would be where we are today at all unless God had answered the way that we felt like he did. And once again, we're phrasing this in a very Christian way, because at the time that is absolutely what we saw. And today we're still working through what these moments were, but there's no hyperbole here. There's no exaggeration. This is right. What happened. And there were
moments like this all throughout our dating life, which was why we kept staying together. Like, we really felt, and I still feel strongly, that we are supposed to be together, and yeah, that there was some kind of pull that kept bringing us to each other, even with all the darkness and the hardship.
I think this Nebraska weekend was a turning point for me, even for me reading the verse about the thorn in my side, because my mentality, which is what my therapist was trying to get me to do this whole time, was finally shifting away from April and her past to me and my identity.
Yeah.
And the initial conclusion was, oh, this is a demon, like the thorn in Paul's side. We need to pray this away. But at least it changed from April's past to my demons. And that was a shift, that Nebraska trip in my mind, and I think in our relationship and how we dealt with it. And so then it was suddenly like, okay, great, April, it's not you. It's not your past. This is my issue. And I was very sure that it was demons. And so...
Yeah, we say demons. At the time, we thought they were literal demons.
Yeah, I mean, it was three demons is what we thought it was.
That
summer, this was after the Nebraska trip, we ended up getting together in Florence, South Carolina.
It was the halfway point between where I was in Virginia and then where Beecher was in Georgia. So we randomly met in Florence, South Carolina. We filmed a fun little video.
Yeah.
Hey, we should put that link.
Yeah, there you go. There's a little bit of levity.
Yeah, we had a fun little music video here. But at one point, so Beecher was raised Baptist, but went to a pretty Pentecostal college. Mm-hmm. They would speak in tongues and stuff. So Beecher was aware of it. And I was raised Pentecostal, and I did speak in tongues. And Beecher asked me while we were staying here in Florence if I would lay hands on them and speak in tongues and cast the demons.
Yeah,
out.
Because we both were convinced, and that's what April had seen in her
world.
I
did it. I literally laid hands on Beecher and rebuked and tried to cast out the demons, and they did not go away.
Well, yeah, and I will say, like, there were other people then in the season that I tried to also do similar things, and mm-hmm. afterwards everyone would, like, look at me, like, did it work? And I don't feel dysphoria all the time, and right. So I'd be like... Yeah, I think so. And then everyone would be like, well, just believe and have faith. And then right. I'd be like, okay. And then, like, you know, 4 hours later, I would start to feel dysphoric and I'd be like, oh no, the demon didn't go away. And so yeah. April was doing what I asked. She was doing
well. I believed it too. And I was, you know, and honestly, I had kind of gotten away from my Pentecostal roots after my dad had died because, you know, we had prayed for my dad to be healed and he wasn't healed. And so I was even questioning if that stuff even worked, and Beecher comes along, and I felt like a rejuvenated faith. I was like, oh no, I believe again. And
I want to be clear too. You weren't like, oh my gosh, Beecher, this is a demon. We have to cast it out of you. It was me saying, no. This is what I think it is. What should we do? And then you told me stories of that you'd seen in your life. And it was like, okay, let's do it. Like, I'm down. Yeah. I'm willing to do anything. And so
I remember you had asked me several times over the course of the next yeah. few months to speak in tongues and lay hands on you.
Yeah.
Because like, good old Pentecostal me did it.
Yeah. And so, you know, after that summer camp ended and I had about a month at my parents' house before I went back to Virginia and where I was in graduate school and where April was. And I really went to war. I fasted for 18 days. I thought I was fasting 6 days for each demon that was inside me.
666.
Yes. And I was having bad panic attacks, especially now that my focus had shifted away from April and onto me and my shame and fear. And so I was not eating very much. I was praying multiple hours a day. And
I remember we would FaceTime and there your wall was just covered in Bible verses.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was the reason I covered my room in Bible verses is because I would wake up with the worst panic attacks in the middle of the night. And when I'd wake up, I would feel so much shame and panic, and I needed something to calm me down. So I put Bible verses on sheets of notebook paper really big all over the room. I mean, the walls were covered with them, and they weren't just the standard like encouraging verses. Like, I dug through the Bible to find these ones that I felt like God was speaking to me. And so I'd wake up at 3 a.m. I would be having a panic attack, and I would just read the verses aloud repeatedly, maybe 3, 4, 5 times until I could calm down and go back to sleep. But I mean, as I'm reading these verses, there's a lot of tears and yeah. pain and difficulty in it. But yeah. And so towards the end of the 18 days, I'm actually on the phone with April because once again, I'm no longer mad and angry at her and her sins, so to speak. I'm focused on me, but I'm talking with April. I'm going to go home in about a week and a half because I had to stay there to shoot a film.
Right. And we're talking, I'm driving, from work back home. I had just started a new job in Virginia full-time a couple months earlier because I had just graduated from grad school. Beecher still had a year and a half left. Anywho, I'm driving back from work. It's on the highway, and I suddenly get hit from a truck because there was a sudden stop on the highway, and so I get rear-ended, and I scream, on the phone and the phone flies out of my hand and I'm on the phone with Beecher.
Yeah. I just heard a scream and nothing. And I was on the phone near my parents and my mom was like, "What is wrong?" And I was like, I don't know what just happened with April. I heard a loud crash, a scream, and then nothing. And I was freaking out. I thought, of course you go to, is April okay? Did I just lose my girlfriend? You know, and it was terrifying. When you finally got back on the phone, of course.
Yeah, I told Beecher what had happened, and the truck that hit me, it was a pretty big pickup truck, and I'm in a little Mitsubishi Outlander Sport, so like a small mini SUV, and the truck was totaled, and if you looked at the back of my vehicle, it didn't even look like it had been hit. There was like a couple scratches on it. Even the guy that hit me was like, "I don't know why you're not more damaged." It honestly felt like a miracle. Either that or Mitsubishis are just the best made car.
And at the time, we thought there were three demons, and you even told me that you thought it felt like three hits, even though it doesn't make sense. Though at the time you said it doesn't even make sense, but in your experience. Yes,
when I was driving the truck, it like hit me, and then it hit me two more times. And I stand by that. I told Beecher right after, it was like, this truck hit me three times, which I know, like,
but once again,
physics doesn't even make sense. Yeah. I told the insurance company that, and they're like, no, that doesn't make sense. Like, a truck wouldn't hit you three times.
But we thought we were praying. I was fasting for three demons. This was the end of my fast. And so we just said, okay, we think that this is a sign that God's protecting us through this.
I remember that night I had what I thought was a vision of an angel that was just protecting my car from the truck.
And once again, we've not sorted through how we view all these events now.
This is just how we viewed them.
But it's how we viewed them in the moment. And it's what kept us together, honestly, even though people are like, why would you stay with each other? And so I actually was not supposed to go back for another like week and a half, 2 weeks. I told my mom, like, nope, I'm going back to Virginia tomorrow. That was too scary. I want to spend time with April and I want to take care of her as she recovers just from a little bit of back pain that you had. So I went back to Virginia and then we met up and we started once again going to therapy and praying for demons to go away. Mm-hmm. And I think the really only other notable thing in this season is the letter. And when I say the letter, April, and I know this well, because in all my time growing up, this is before April, in all my time growing up with gender dysphoria, I had never told anyone, but I had written a letter expressing the feelings that I was going through, my confusion on being a boy or a girl and all these things. And I'd written a letter, and I'd written it, I think, as a way so that if I died, someone would go and find it and know that I went through a really hard time, because I wanted people to know that I had done all of this for the Lord and I had struggled so much and it not be in vain. And so I'd written this letter and I put it in this envelope and it was like, never read, never open, private. I will be so mad if you read it. And so, yeah, and it was written in my 10th grade handwriting. It was very open and vulnerable and confusing, but it was very clear that it was gender dysphoria. And so we are dating. We're back at Regent. I feel like I finally got my head above water.
You were starting to get healthy.
I was starting to get healthy. I was starting to kind of understand a little bit more of myself, but not have as many panic attacks. And so we said, all right, I think, you know, with the last act to put these demons behind us, we'll burn the letter. And so we had this big like ceremony where I took the letter and I burnt it. And now, I mean, you literally just the other day said, I wish we hadn't done that.
Right. Because now it would have been a testament of like how far you've come and how far we've come. But at the time we thought we just need to burn it. It's going away.
Yeah. And so we did that, and
I feel like we had a couple months of peace. Yeah,
we did. It was like, wow, okay. I think
so. We thought it worked.
I think this worked. And while once again, I still had thoughts, they were nowhere near as overpowering as they had been for the previous year. And so it was like, okay, wow, maybe we're through it. And so at this point, our relationship, as April said, turned really good. We were, it was pretty much the fun without the really, really difficult stuff that we've been going through.
And so we at this point, like a couple months later in the fall, Beecher starts working as like part-time for video for a local church. I start being a worship leader at this church. This is the same church that Beecher will eventually work full-time for. And so we start building community and establishing like our life in Virginia together, and we start making like our own friends together. Mm-hmm.
and we're healthy and we're in love, and it finally reaches the point where I will say on the intimacy front, we had not crossed the line of having intercourse, but we were really wanting to, and we were struggling.
Our flesh was burning with desire.
So we'd only been dating at this point, 11 months, but I finally decided that I was going to propose. And so, that's a crazy story in its own right. So April and I, as she mentioned, we went to Florence. We shot a crazy music video. We actually did a series of goofy videos, which we can possibly include those in the credits of this video as well. But I told her that I wanted to make a video reenacting our relationship from the syllabus letter all the way through to the shells, all of the things we've kind of talked about, but without all of the really negative, dark stuff, obviously. Yeah.
Which also, like, even working in admissions, because there was a season there where you just worked on the other side of the communication building. It's true. So we would, like, meet in the coffee room. So there's all these things, and the Christmas ball, all these things.
There's a version of our love story that is a much happier, sanitized version that, you know, we didn't want to get into all of it just because of how long it would be. But yes, you'll see in the proposal that
there's other things we did not get into in this podcast.
Yes. So I convinced April that we would do a video reenacting a relationship. We did it to these songs that we really liked at the time. This was in November. And at the very end, I had her walk through a door and I told her.
The door was in the middle of a field.
Yeah.
And Beecher told me that when I walked through that they would edit it afterwards to make it look like I was walking into this like really beautiful animated world, and I thought, oh my gosh, that sounds amazing, yes please.
And so we did a run through and she walked through it and it was fine. I was like, that was perfect.
Now, well, also you brought in a different videographer for this scene. So I walked through the door, Beecher told me to like look around, like I'm seeing things floating in the sky like butterflies and stuff. And I noticed in my peripheral vision that Beecher is low to the ground, like on their knees. And the thought that I had wasn't that Beecher was proposing. It was that, oh my gosh, what are they doing? They're going to ruin the shot.
And so when April, of course, turned to me, and you can see this in the video, I was, of course, had a ring. And I said, April, you're the love of my life. Will you marry me? And you said?
I said, wait, what?
Yeah, wait, what?
Is this for real?
That was your answer.
And then I eventually say yes. I have a terrible surprised shock face, we've learned.
After the proposal, of course, she was happy. We went to a really nice dinner at a restaurant that's in this old church, and it was really nice. But there were several times that you even said, like, is that it? Is that kind of all? Because in the moment, it didn't feel like that much. But that next week, what we did is right before we went home for Thanksgiving, I wanted to edit the video together to show our friends and family. We uploaded the video to YouTube.
Right.
And somehow I made it over to a platform called Godvine, because in the proposal, I mentioned God a few times,
I mentioned a worship leader
in a church.
Yeah.
The Christian world just like picked it up.
Loved it.
And ran with it.
So it went viral, but it also got picked up. The Blaze, Glenn Beck's site, shared it. There was an article on BuzzFeed. They made
GIFs of us on BuzzFeed dancing.
Yeah, animated GIFs, which was pretty cool, not gonna lie. It like went to random places, like MSN Australia, like Yahoo Canada. But the biggest thing was that Fox News, Fox and Friends, wanted to have us on their show. So we were on Fox News to talk about our proposal. And then we were on the 700 Club to talk about our proposal. In fact, the very opening of our podcast, you hear Terry Musin, who's one of the 700 Club hosts, say, it's a match made in heaven. Their love story be heard around the world. That was from when we were on the 700 Club.
Yeah. And so in a weird way, this video that I honestly had made for friends and family, I mean, it's 6 minutes long. I would not have edited something so long if I was trying to make it go viral. But somehow, some way, the world kind of picked up and ran with it. But it was most of the momentum was in the Christian world, and they just saw this perfect Christian couple. And it was such a weird experience for us because our dating relationship had been so, so rocky and so perilous. And then to see the sanitized, happy version of it just like take off. So, it was fun. It was really wild. Our families were very supportive of our engagement. They love the video. They love they could see it. So we'll post it in the comments. And actually, it's funny. I've been a professor for a number of years, and my students, every once in a while, I could always tell when they'd found the video because they'd be looking at me way differently. I'd be like, what is going on? And they're like, we saw your proposal video. It's so cute. And so it still pops up here
every
and there.
Once in a while, like probably maybe once every 6 months, I'll get a comment on TikTok that's like, oh my gosh, are you the girl from that proposal video? I knew you looked familiar. So like people remember it. We actually got recognized one time, like shortly after it happened out in public. Someone asked if we were the couple from that proposal video.
Yeah, it was a very fun experience. And at the time, we kind of saw it as a reward for all of the awfulness we've gone through.
And just further confirmation that we're supposed to be together, because things like this just don't happen to people.
Yeah, so after a very intense episode, we are going to end on that high note.
Yes.
On the next episode, we're going to get into our engaged season and the kind of early stages of our marriage.
Yes. And just, you know, spoiler alert, the gender dysphoria comes back.
Yeah.
It did not go away.
It didn't. But yeah, so we'll get to that next time on the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. And just don't forget to leave us a review or reach out to us. And thanks so much for all the support and love. And please, if you have any comments or questions about any of this journey or about our lives now, like, we do want to do an episode towards the end where we address some, you know, frequently asked questions. So reach out to us, nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. We would love if you would take the time to leave us a review or a 5-star rating wherever you listen. And if you need to get a hold of us, you can email us at nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com or individually on TikTok or Instagram at April Ajoy or at Hello Beecher. Stay tuned for new episodes coming out weekly. Thanks again for listening.